WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Tuesday, April 12th, 2016, and if you are a Michigan State men's basketball fan, you are hurting right now. There's no other way to put it. No other way to put it. Not just one L last night after Mr. Josh Jackson decided to take his basketball talents elsewhere, not to East Lansing, but also breaking news just broke literally, I want to say about an hour ago concerning a current Michigan State men's basketball player. We'll bring that news to you. Of course, we will talk about Josh Jackson deciding to go to Kansas. That and more. And we not only have one guest for today's show, but we have a double whammy for you. That's right. Two guests for today's Current Sports. We will be inviting, and not too long from now, Dr. William Anderson. Now, William Anderson has one incredible resume. He's actually a member of the Board of Trustees, American Osteopathic Association, and was also one of the right-hand men for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. during the Civil Rights Movement. And also, he was very close with the man, the myth, the legend, Jackie Robinson. We'll invite Dr. William Anderson to talk about Jackie's legacy on the show as part two of the Ken Burns PBS documentary entitled Jackie Robinson will be airing tonight. You don't want to miss that. And we will also be inviting Xavier DeGroat to talk about his upcoming book centered on the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. That and more, folks. Call in and be a part of today's show, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. All right, folks, Deontay Davis is leaving Michigan State. The school announced this morning that the freshman will enter the NBA draft and sign with an agent, which effectively ends his college career. Now, Davis, a 6'10", 240-pound forward from Muskegon, he averaged 7.5 points, 5.5 rebounds in his lone year with the Spartans. He set the school freshman record with 64 blocked shots, second most in a single season in program history. We'll have more on that in just a second. Also, the Josh Jackson saga is finally over. After a long wait, the number one overall basketball recruit in the nation announced via Twitter at 8:30 p.m. last night that he will be attending the University of Kansas next year. Jackson was also deciding between Arizona and, of course, Michigan State. We'll have more on that story as well. All right, Mark D'Antonio actually appeared on the Team 92.1 FM yesterday and expressed his displeasure with the recent vote by the NCAA member conferences to ban satellite camp, saying, quote, "I guess abuse brings control," end quote. Now, according to the Free Press, the vote by Division I schools to ban satellite camps passed 6-4. The Big Ten was one of the four conferences to vote against the ban, which will appear in front of the NCAA Board of Directors at their meeting on April 28th. The Michigan State Athletic Program held their annual Spartan Academic Excellence Gala on Monday night at the Breslin Center, where almost 350 student-athletes were recognized for their academic achievements. Now, the keynote speaker for the event was Hall of Fame pitcher, get this, John Smoltz. Very cool stuff, and congratulations to all of the Michigan State student-athletes who were honored for their work in academia. All right, Oakland University men's basketball coach Greg Campy received a three-year contract extension after completing his 32nd season with the Golden Grizzlies. Now, the 60-year-old Campy was making a little more than $275,000 on his former contract and will now make approximately $288,000 a year. Campy has guided the Grizzlies from Division II to Division I during the 1990s, taking the school to three NCAA tournament appearances. He trails only Jim Boeheim and Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, as the most tenured coaches at their current school and is 18th nationally in career wins. Very impressive there. All right, the Detroit Tigers dropped their second game of the season last night, losing to the Pittsburgh Pirates yesterday afternoon, 7-4. Now, Justin Verlander got the start for the Tigers, and not a great outing for JV. He was doubled five times before being taken out of the game in the fifth inning. All in all, he gave up 7 runs off 10 hits and 4 in 1/3 innings of work. He threw 111 pitches, which is the most he's ever thrown in an outing, and lasted less than 5 innings. More bad news for the Tigers catcher, James McCann. He has been placed actually on the 15-day disabled list after spraining his right ankle during the game. The Tigers purchased the contract of catcher Bobby Wilson from Toledo. All right, folks, the Detroit Pistons are in action tonight. They will play host to the Miami Heat at the Palace of Auburn Hills. The Pistons are in search of the 7 seed in the East with 2 games left to play. They are currently deadlocked with the Indiana Pacers for that 7 seed, who also have 2 games left, though the Pacers own the tiebreaker over Detroit. Tip time is set for 7:30 p.m. tonight. All right, in an interview after practice, Pavel Datsyuk said a return to the wings next season is not completely out of the picture, saying, quote, "You never know what will happen. It's hard to make a decision on what will happen tomorrow, today. Everything is possible. It's not a final decision 100%. Datsyuk said in an interview with the Detroit Free Press that he would be going back to Russia following this season. Datsyuk says he did the Free Press interview to address the rumors circulating about him retiring. And also, folks, new surveillance video has been released concerning the death of now former New Orleans Saints player Will Smith. The video of the hit-and-run incident that led to Will Smith's death shows to appears to show Smith's SUV bumping into the suspected shooter, Cardale Hayes, his Hummer, at a stop. Now, the Hummer pulls over, but Smith appears to go around, while Hayes then speeds after the SUV in pursuit. Now, Hayes allegedly shot Smith to death 8 minutes after the video was captured, while his wife was also struck in the leg twice. Such a sad story. Our thoughts and prayers go out to the Smith family. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Our phone lines are open right now if you want to weigh in on anything on your sports noggin. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there, and I will read it here live on our airwaves, or you can even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, so much to talk to, so little time. Let's start the show.
One of the top high school prospects in the country has made his decision. Josh Jackson is headed to Kansas. Welcome into your ESPN.com headlines. I'm Jen Latta. Joined now by Jeff Borzello. He's our ESPN recruiting reporter. The 6'7" small forward has ties to a couple of other programs, Jeff. He visited MSU. He's from Michigan. And he also won a gold medal with USA Basketball in Arizona's Sean Miller. So why is he headed to Lawrence?
Well, I think he sees that he could start right away at Kansas. They're losing Wayne Selden. They're losing Brandon Green, both to the NBA. And Josh Jackson can slide right into the small forward spot. And I think he sees what they did with Andrew Wiggins. I know a lot of people said, you know, Andrew Wiggins didn't have a great year, but he ended up being the number one pick. And I just think that, you know, Josh Jackson sort of sees himself in that same mold, a two-way player that could defend, that could score. And I just think that Kansas is sort of the perfect fit for him. And like you said, he had 2 other good options, and you know, they were close. It was a close three-way battle throughout, but Kansas won out, and I just think that's the place where he can make the most impact right away.
You mentioned his two-way ability and that he believes he can have an impact with the Jayhawks next season. Do you see this guy having a pro career?
I think so. I think right now, if I had to pick, I think he'd be the favorite to be the number one draft pick in 2017. I just think it's the fact that he can defend, he can score, and what really sets him apart is his competitive streak. I mean, he really wants to win. And you can probably say that about a lot of kids, but you know, he really showed during the McDonald's All-American practices and things like that, that he brings that leadership, he brings that determination, and to me, that's what really sets him apart. You know, I think he's going to have the biggest impact of any freshman here in college basketball.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. And folks, Mid-Michigan is buzzing right now. The news of Josh Jackson last night at 8:30 p.m. deciding to take his basketball talents not to Michigan State University, but to the University of Kansas. Of course, Michigan State, Arizona, and Kansas were in that final billing trying to woo Jackson to their respective programs, and Tom Izzo and company loses out. But not only do they lose out on Josh Jackson, but next year they will have to do without star freshman Deontay Davis, who was stellar this past season. Davis had decided this morning to take his talents to the NBA draft and sign with an agent. Again, this news broke around 11:44 a.m. this morning. That's when I received the email from Michigan State Athletics. Here's a quote from Michigan State's own Tom Izzo. Quote, as a coach, my job is to help my players grow both on and off the basketball court. Over the last year, Deontay has improved as a player as he is just starting to tap his true potential off the court. There is no question that he has grown by leaps and bounds as he matures as a young man. I've been fortunate to live my dreams, but the real thrill as a coach is getting to see my players live their dreams. I look forward to following Deontay's development and career in the NBA for years to come. We've got a jam-packed show today. We have two guests on the show today, and I'm going to invite the first guest in just a second, but this is going to be the premise, the foundation of which we start today's show, because I want to get your thoughts on what this team will look like next year. I want to get your thoughts on Josh Jackson deciding to say, nah, I don't want to be a Spartan. I want to be a Jayhawk and go to Kansas. And I also want to get your thoughts on how prepared do you think that Mr. Deontay Davis is to compete at the next level in the National Basketball Association. Quick thoughts. You'll get my elongated thoughts later on in the show. But I want to get the thoughts right now of Isaac Constance, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. Brief thoughts, Isaac, before we get to our first guest today. What are you shocked about these two revelations concerning the Michigan State basketball program?
I'm not shocked about either, but I'd say it's a rough 24 hours and, you know, a rough month for Spartan fans in general with all of the domestic violence things in the pros. And then you come back and you have this. It's less than ideal, certainly. Now, what's important is not to lose sight of what happened before this, which was recruiting the number two class in the nation. That's still a big deal. Don't forget about that. But losing Josh Jackson, that does put a little more strain on the players you have. And then I thought Deontay Davis was actually the bigger loss because I thought not only would it have benefited him to return for one season, just because I'm not quite sure if we saw the pro-ready skill set in college. I still see him as a very raw player who might take a few years to get acclimated to the NBA environment. But I think also that shapes up an MSU team, which might be a little bit short on big men. So I'd be interested to see how this team does next year, and I know we will, and I know they'll do great. But at the same time, rough 24 hours definitely hurts a little bit of the buzz going into the 2017-2016 season.
And let's be clear here. You cannot fault the decisions of either one of these young men, if you ask me. Deontay Davis, I'm sure Izzo, as you just heard in his comments, Izzo is a guy that if you really want to test the waters and see where your NBA draft stock is, Izzo has many friends in the league.
Yes.
He's going to reach out to coaching personnel, reach out to GMs, reach out to his friends of the league to really assess where they think where they believe Deontay will go in the NBA draft. And if he is a top draft pick and the money's there, why not? Why not? You're not guaranteed your next game, let alone your next practice, all right? Injuries happen. So I can't fault Deontay for making this move for his well-being. I get it. Totally get it. Is he ready from a X's and O's standpoint? I think he could have used another year to polish his skills. I think that's the general consensus when having that discussion. And when it comes to Josh Jackson, hey, he literally took all the time in the world to make sure that this is the right fit for him.
Yeah.
Okay, even at 8:30, I'm sitting there like an idiot refreshing my phone, hitting left and right like, okay, did I miss his announcement? He said 8:30. Yeah. It didn't take until 8:32, okay? He literally milked every waning moment before he decided to make his decision. So I trust that he's making the best decision, at least in his eyes. So, again, we'll discuss this later on in the show. Again, we've got two guests. We've got a loaded show today, but I want to get your thoughts on when Josh Jackson deciding to go to Kansas and also Deontay Davis taking his talents to the NBA. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, William G. Anderson was the first African-American who was a member of the Board of Trustees of the American Osteopathic Association, otherwise known as the AOA, for 20 years, where he served as president also. Now, he was best known for his role in the Coalition of Desegregation, a civil rights movement called the Albany Movement, which Anderson led, was formed by local activists in Albany, Georgia, in 1961. He also worked closely, I should say, with African-American pioneers like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and even Jackie Robinson. And the newest Ken Burns PBS documentary is entitled simply Jackie Robinson. It's an in-depth look at the life and times of the Brooklyn Dodgers star, who was really central to the integration of Major League Baseball in 1947. Part one was fantastic. It aired last night at 9 p.m. on WKAR-TV, and part two will air tonight at the same time. To talk about that and so much more, it is my pleasure to welcome William Anderson to WKAR's Current Sports. William, how you doing? And thanks so much for your time.
Well, I'm doing very well. As a matter of fact, today is the best day that I've seen in Michigan, I believe, since 19 whatever, whatever.
Right, exactly.
We have sunshine, we have temperatures that are approaching 50 and promise to be even higher. So I'm very pleased to participate in the discussions with you today.
Oh, it is so fantastic to have you, William. And yes, we are certainly glad the weather is finally breaking. And it allows individuals to go out there and play some baseball. So we are fortunate and blessed for that. All right. Now, William, now you attained your undergraduate degree from Alabama State College for Negroes back in 1949. And then went on to Des Moines University in Iowa to receive your certification in surgery. Now, I got to ask, William, what inspired you to pursue a degree in the medical field?
Well, I can tell you, a lot of people in my hometown of Americus, Georgia, wanted to know the same thing. What motivated me to even try that? There was a paucity of African-American physicians throughout the United States, especially in the South. Why would you want to do that? You're already segregated once. Why do you want to be segregated again by going into medicine? Well, I cannot tell you what the motivation was, but I can tell you this. I had the wholehearted support of my parents, my mother and father, that valued education more than anything else, and they encouraged their children, I had a brother and a sister, to do whatever they want to do, as long as they stay in school. You're going to get out of this house and go to school. We don't care what you do when you go to school.
So right.
I elected to become a physician.
Wow, that's fantastic stuff. Now, you also served as associate dean of the Kirksville College of Osteopathic Medicine, a clinical professor of osteopathic surgical specialties right here, actually, at Michigan State University's College of Osteopathic Medicine, which is pretty cool. How do you describe your time here at Michigan, William?
Well, having come from Georgia and coming to Michigan, it was a major revelation. You mean we don't have the widespread signs of colored and white, and we don't have those restaurants and hotels that you cannot go into? We don't have that in Michigan. So it was an amazing revelation to me, because I only spent a small amount of time outside of Southwest Georgia when I was in the Navy for a couple of years, and then for the 4 years in Des Moines. And believe it or not, when I went to Des Moines as a medical student, there was still widespread segregation and discrimination. in hotels and restaurants, yes, even in bars and grills. Not that I should be going to those bars. I'm saying that the segregation was very evident. Also, I can say this about the dean of the College of Osteopathic Medicine. He counseled me on places I should go and places I should not try to go. And he further counseled me on my social activity, saying specifically, you should not socialize with white women in Des Moines. Well, I did not expect that. But at one of the official college functions, the chairman of the Department of Biochemistry, who was a white woman, I think she perhaps had a couple of drinks of some sort, but anyway, she told one of my classmates, go and tell Dion Anderson I want to dance with him. What a dilemma. If I dance with her, the dean's going to put me out. If I don't dance with her, she's going to flunk me and I'm out. So what did I do? I took another drink and I danced with her.
Wow.
To my amazement, get this, to my amazement, nothing happened. The building didn't fall down. Des Moines didn't go away. The school didn't close. The dean didn't put me out of school. None of that happened. I think perhaps it was because somebody from the white community was just waiting for somebody to break the ice, to take down that barrier. That's the way I felt about Jackie Robinson. When he was called on by Branch Rickey to come up and join the Brooklyn Dodgers, he didn't think they want me just because I'm a good baseball player, and he had proven that in the Negro National Baseball League. He said he wants me because some of us white people do not want to continue this system of racial segregation and discrimination, and it is time for the Brooklyn Dodgers to take that first step. He selected the best possible person he could select. He was smart, had a college education, a superb athlete who started basketball, baseball, football, and baseball. So he says, I also need to know about his temperament. Could he withstand the insults, the abuse, the abusive language? Could he withstand that and still not fight back? In other words, even before there was a Martin Luther King Jr., there was at least one African-American who was breaking down barriers nonviolently. That was Jackie Robinson.
And, you know, I want to have a follow-up to what you just stated there, William, because I hear that all the time, and that's also what has been highlighted so far throughout the documentary that is airing on our airwaves right now, just highlighting Jackie's personality. When Branch Rickey, when he was looking for someone of African-American descent to really break that color barrier, again, he was looking for someone that had a personality that was not going to bite back at all of the insults that he would receive at that level. What about Jackie's personality allowed him to just be even keel and to just deal with it because he knew that he was representing such a bigger cause than himself at the time? Just kind of talk about Jackie's personality in that sense of the conversation, William.
Self-discipline, first of all, it was necessary. Now, mind you, he had been admonished already before he accepted the position as a member of that baseball team. He had already been admonished. You're going to be called all sorts of terrible names. You're going to be spat on. They will try to injure you. They will not want to play against you. As a matter of fact, one of the early baseball teams in his early years said, no, we don't want that nigger playing baseball down here in Philadelphia. Well, Branch Rickey was one of those who said, he's the best player we got. If you don't want him, you can forfeit the game. Well, they began to think then, what is more important? Maintain this system of racial segregation and discrimination, or do we want to have a magnificent baseball player that will advance the baseball game, not just for African Americans, but open the doors for people who are other than Anglo-Saxon Americans?
So true. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the great William Anderson, who was the first African-American who was a member of the Board of Trustees of the American Osteopathic Association for 20 years, where he also served as president. William, do you remember the first time you met Jackie Robinson? And can you kind of just take us through that encounter? What was that moment like for you?
Well, If there is such a thing as a magical moment in your life, you'll better understand this. I had not met Jackie Robinson in person, but we all celebrated throughout the United States when Jackie Robinson was first brought to the Brooklyn Dodgers. And if I had a favorite baseball team, it was the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I got pissed off when the Brooklyn Dodgers left Brooklyn. But anyway, I'm saying that we in the African-American community knew there was baseball. We knew there was professional baseball, but there were no blacks. So when Jackie Robinson was called on, I became enthralled with what he was able to do to take all the insight, take all the abuse. And I admired French Rickey for taking the risk that he took. Because if all the other teams had refused to play the Brooklyn Dodgers, maybe they would not have gone that far. But, so I felt as though he's a great representative for the African Americans of America. Yes, he would break down a lot of barriers. Yes, he would do it in the mode of Martin Luther King Jr., who had not yet broken onto the scene, but he would do it in the mode of Martin Luther King Jr., that is, nonviolent. Otherwise, I do not believe he would have had the success that he had. He could not fight back. So, I did not meet him personally, although I was in love with him, in love with his baseball playing, and I had never heard of anybody stealing home. I think that was the first time in the history of baseball.
You don't right. steal home. Right.
But anyway, I did not meet him in person, although I admired him from afar. Now, what made me increase my admiration, if I could do it any more than it was already, I was in the midst of the Albany Movement. The purpose of the movement was to break down again barriers of segregation and discrimination. Specifically, up until that time, blacks did not have the right to vote, to register and vote. And I joined the Students Nonviolent Coordinating Committee because they were there in Albany on a voter registration project. That's all. And as a result of that, they were abused, they were put in jail, they were beaten, they were denied access to restaurants, hotels, all of that. And I saw what they were doing, and I had a wife, and I had three children at the time, and I said to my wife, those children out there demonstrating to get the right to vote, that's not just for them. That's for me, for my family, for us, for all of us. And I went and joined the students, the oldest one demonstrating in the early part of those days. But I felt as though they're doing that for me. I can do no less than join them. So I went out and joined the students in the demonstrations. That was the beginning of the Albany Movement. Now, how did the white establishment accept that? If you were employed by one of them, you got laid off. If you had a mortgage, it was canceled. If you wanted a loan, you couldn't get it. And they bombed our homes. They burned our churches. That's when it got the attention of Jackie Robinson. I had no idea Jackie Robinson was motivated as he was in the civil rights movement. I did not know that. But when Jackie Robinson found out what was going on, especially they burned down the churches. Mm-hmm. That's the worst thing you could do to any group of people to somehow or another desecrate their religious temples, I would call them. So Jackie Robinson read about that. He called me, and Martin Luther King was in Albany at the time. He said, I'd like to come down there and help you rebuild those churches. Almost said a bad word, but let me say, how can you respond when a person of that stature that had made a name for himself, had established a reputation for himself, how do you respond? And he said, I want to come down there to help you rebuild those churches. And he came, and he stayed several days, and he went out to visit where the churches had been bombed. And he said, Dr. Anderson, I'm going to help you to rebuild those bombed-out churches. They will not be able to stop this movement by threats and intimidation and by burning down churches and bombing your homes. That's when I got to know him as other than a superior athlete, other than a superior business person, other than being a banker, all of those things. But yes, he was a person who had all of those accolades. But at the same time, he was sensitive to the plight of African Americans in the United States. So he said, I am going to help you rebuild those churches. They are not going to stop us.
What a remarkable, remarkable story. And, you know, just minutes before
we took the air today, William. I actually received a picture from Jessica Bardolis, who is in charge of media relations for the American Osteopathic Association, who set up this wonderful interview. And she actually sent me a picture of Jackie Robinson sitting on one of the main sites of where those churches were burned down. It's a really unbelievable picture, and we will be sure to put that and post that on our WKAR website when we post the podcast of this episode. William, short on time here. Before we get you out, I just want to ask about, you know, your connection to the civil rights movement and what inspired you to join the movement. What experiences did you have that made you say, okay, I got to get involved and really impact our community because something has to change here? What inspired you to get involved?
Number one, growing up in America's Georgia, being denied all of the opportunities that my white counterparts had, it caused me some concern. I did not know how to deal with that. Frankly, there was no civil rights movement as such, although there had been much civil rights activity by that time, but there was no organization that was specifically addressing segregation discrimination like NAACP, like SCLC, Martin Luther King's organization, the Urban League. Those organizations came on board, came into the view of the public a considerable time before I was aware of them being such organizations. So in America's Georgia, though, I knew I had to go down the back alley to go to see a movie, and I could only go to certain days, a certain time of day. I knew I was denied access to the cafeterias in town. I knew that I went to a segregated school. We always had secondhand books that were tattered and battered. We always had second-class classrooms. So I was aware of that, but I, like many other African-Americans, had come to accept it, not because we liked it, not because we wanted it, but we did not know how to attack that because we did know that every major change in society has come about as a result of a war. America's foundation was a war. Mm-hmm. And there have been many wars all over the country, many involved over the religious thing. But what I'm saying is, when there has been an attempt to make a social change, it has been through violence. We did not have the capacity then. We had no guns, no tanks, no warships. So what did we have? All of a sudden, there was a Martin Luther King Jr. who had been successful in Montgomery with the Montgomery bus boycott that broke down the wall of segregation so far as intercity bus transportation. So we said, wow, he had that kind of success. Maybe we should take another route. We cannot win violently with guns and war. We can't win that way. So we said, let's pattern ourselves after Martin Luther King. Fortunately, I had met him a number of years earlier because I married a lady from Atlanta, Georgia, who is deceased now. She had a brother who was an aspiring minister and coincidentally was a classmate of Martin Luther King Jr. at Morehouse College, the most prestigious ever college in the world. Martin Luther King and my brother-in-law then.
William, I think you're breaking up on us really briefly here. Can you hear me?
I hear you very well.
Yeah, you're breaking. Are you on your? I think you may be on your cell phone. I think the connection's going weak here. Right when it started getting good.
All right. Well, the underlying principle was this.
Yeah.
We felt as though the only way you can bring about social. However, we did not. The other war. We had no.
We may have to cut William. I don't think we have many more. William, are you there?
I'm here.
It's really breaking up on us. I don't know I don't know if you could change the location, but I really want to get to this. What was the underlying message there? Go ahead, proceed. I'm sorry.
There is another way, a better way to change society.
Right.
And it is nonviolently. Now, if anybody that wants to call me back on my phone to see if it'll make a difference, I'll give you the number.
Yeah, please do that.
All right, 313.
Yes.
578-9608.
Okay. And we will definitely post that as well if they want to reach out to you to talk about the incredible movement. And really briefly here, short on time here, but about a minute left, William. What was it like meeting and working alongside Dr. Martin Luther King?
It was something that I never could have imagined, because there was a time when I did not recognize that one day he would become a world leader. When he was practicing his preaching with my brother-in-law, it became an annoyance. Did you ever live with anybody who was learning how to play a violin?
Fortunately, I didn't.
So I said to him at one point, I says, "Martin, why don't you just shut up? Practicing that preaching." I did not realize that I was telling a future world leader, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, a PhD, an outstanding preacher. I did not know I was telling him to just shut up. But that did not destroy the relationship. Our relationship was built on that. So when I got in trouble in Albany, I had hundreds of people in jail, didn't know how to get them out. There were only two black lawyers anywhere around that would take a civil rights case. I remembered you had befriended Martin Luther King Jr. when he was a college student. Number one. Number two, you went to Albany State College that you mentioned at the beginning of the program, that Abernathy, Ralph David Abernathy, was a classmate of mine at Albany State. Mm-hmm. At Alabama State. And my life fell in love with him and his family with us. So when I got in trouble in Albany, I had two friends that I could call on who already had established themselves as civil rights leaders, nonviolently. That was Martin Luther King and Ralph David Abernathy.
Wow. Remarkable stuff. There you have it. Dr. William Anderson, again, a member of the Board of Trustees of the American Osteopathic Association for 20 years, where he also served as president. I tell you what, Dr. Anderson, we have to keep in touch, and we definitely want to bring you back to our airwaves, because I haven't even scratched the surface of what I wanted to dive into, but that was absolutely remarkable stuff. Thank you so much, Dr. Anderson.
You're welcome, and you know how to get in touch with me. If not with me, you can go through Wendy Westbrook. She will let you know how to get me, okay? Thank you so much.
You got it. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you.
Right.
That was an absolute pleasure. Oh, my goodness. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will be bringing on our second guest for today's show, Xavier DeGroat, author of an upcoming book on the great one, that's right, Muhammad Ali. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Again, we just wrapped up an unbelievable conversation with Dr. William Anderson. Again, he was the first African-American who was a member of the Board of Trustees of the American Osteopathic Association for 20 years, where he also served as president. He was best known for his role in the Coalition of Desegregation, a civil rights movement called the Albany Movement, which Anderson actually led and was formed by local activists in Georgia in 1961. He also was one of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s right-hand men. Unbelievable interview, Isaac. Oh, my goodness. I could have talked to him for 3 hours. That's unbelievable stuff, dude.
I know. I'm upset because he hung up the phone right after, but I wanted to tell him thank you. Seriously,
yeah.
that was fantastic. That's one of the best interviews we've had in my history at WKR, let alone all year.
Yeah, that was absolutely one to remember. And I promise our listeners, we will definitely bring Dr. Anderson back on the show, because I also want to talk about a few more experiences. I mean, he has an extensive Wikipedia page and a few more experiences that I wanted to bring up, but because of we're short on time, I could not. So that was absolutely fantastic. Got to remind you all that, again, part one aired last night, but part two of the newest Ken Burns PBS documentary entitled Jackie Robinson. It's an in-depth look at the life and times of Brooklyn Dodgers, the Brooklyn Dodgers star who was a central part to the integration of Major League Baseball back in 1947. Part two airs tonight at 9 p.m. on WKAR-TV. A lot of historical context on today's show. Also, I want to read a few of your comments. Many of you have decided to weigh in via social media when it comes to Deontay Davis and Josh Jackson making their decisions to, Josh making his decision not to come to the program, and Deontay making a decision to leave the program and head to the pros. This is via my Facebook page. And concerning Josh Jackson, Ryan Walker just gives two angry faces. Tiara Murray says, shaking my head. John Freeberg says, boo. Bob Every, friend of the show, says, quote, not all players are cut out to be Spartans. And also a few comments here concerning Deontay Davis making that leap to the NBA. Romley Lewis says, I don't know how I feel about this. Caster underscore Troy 06 says, two L's in 2 days. Awesome. And then you have Wit, and she just concurs with Caster Troy 06 saying, right, shaking my head. So absolutely no positive feedback whatsoever when it comes to these two stories, Isaac.
Yeah, you didn't really expect it, but at the same time, I'm an optimist. I like to encourage people to look on the bright side, the great recruiting class still. But no, I agree. This 24 hours has not been great for the Spartan faithful. I can see where they're coming from. There was definitely a lot of pent-up anticipation. And boy, you couldn't have a bigger letdown.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's get to our second guest for today's show. Before we bring him on, I want to play a bit of a montage from one of the greatest to ever do it.
I don't like fighters who talk too much.
Henry Cooper's nothing but a tramp. He's a bum. I'm the world's greatest. He must fall in 5 rounds, but if you talk about me, I'll cut it 3.
What's going to happen to him?
He might be great, but he'll fall in 8.
No special training. Just be at the fight. I'm ready to back up everything I'm saying, and I'm through talking.
Is this?
The man to beat me haven't been born yet. And after I'm through beating him, I think he'll have to join the Beatles and be a singer.
Joe Frazier's in trouble, because the Muhammad Ali Joe Frazier's going to meet is going to be better than the Muhammad Ali he met 3 years.
I want to whoop both of these men in one night, and I'll have a record that nobody can touch.
I'm going to do something to Joe Frazier that might be illegal. My lawyers told me to bring a bail bondsman to get me out of jail. They might put my tail in jail and get me out on bail after what I do to Joe Frazier.
Oh, boy. I could listen to that all day. The greatest trash talker of all time, and in my opinion, the greatest boxer of all time. And actually, I don't really think it's a debate when looking at what Ali was able to do throughout his entire career. He took on anyone, and he was victorious. Victorious. He was the ultimate champion when it comes to the world of boxing. But I actually saw a debate via social media, actually yesterday, so less than 24 hours ago, about who was greater between Mike Tyson and Muhammad Ali, and I just kind of scoffed at it and said, really? I'm not even going to waste my time with even commenting on that picture. So, yeah, folks, to talk about the great one, Muhammad Ali, and so much more, this individual has a piece coming, a piece of work coming that is going to be must-read stuff, folks. He is the author of an upcoming book on Muhammad Ali, in which he has talked to countless individuals about the sport of boxing, in the context of what Ali meant to the sport of boxing and beyond. It is my pleasure to welcome author Xavier DeGroat to WKAR's Current Sports. Xavier, thank you so much for your time. How you doing?
Great.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, all right? Xavier is live in studio with us. So first off, Xavier, I want to ask you, what inspired you to write this piece of work?
Oh, Muhammad Ali was definitely beyond a boxer. He had done much to help impact society as a whole. He went around the world later in his life, became one of the greatest humanitarians there ever was in history. Muhammad Ali, particularly, if you trace his history, his original name was Cassius Clay. And Cassius Clay has its own history. His name, Cassius Clay, started out with an abolitionist named Cassius Marcellus Clay in 1810 when he became one of the sons of the most wealthy slaveholder in Louisville, Kentucky. And that given Muhammad Ali the idea that I'm not going to be called Cassius Clay no more. Muhammad Ali is my name. Don't call me Cassius Clay. That's a slave name. So as later on, Muhammad Ali joining the Nation of Islam, the Nation of Islam was much of an influence to him becoming a successful African-American of his time. And Malcolm X even joined him and told him, hey, great fight, man, with Sonny Liston. You beat the heavyweight champion that was unbelievable.
I remember that. You know, I actually remember when Will Smith, you remember when Will Smith played Ali, Isaac, in that movie?
Yeah.
It was a great movie, too. It was a pretty good acting job, too, by Will Smith, I must say. And I remember they profiled Malcolm X in the movie as well and talked about that relationship when Ali decided to join the Nation of Islam. But for you, Xavier, whenever you write a book, it's got to be something personal to you. What inspired you about Muhammad Ali? Why do you like the sport of boxing in general? And what drew you to Ali in general? I got to know.
Oh, because he had influenced me to become my own individual and don't let anyone tell me what I can and can't do. Him being an African-American of his time was very difficult to become this outspoken anti-Vietnam War activist, as well as becoming a great poet, and you can call him entertaining, mm-hmm. as well as very serious of what he said while he was being a poet out in the league and outside the ring.
Now, I want to go on something you just talked about, because Xavier, you and I mean, we sat in the studio, I want to say, for about 15 minutes before we took the air today, and we talked about just how you have a personal connection with the story of Muhammad Ali, as you just really laid out there. And how Ali, when he was going through trials and tribulations, when he was a fighter, you yourself have. And you were actually diagnosed with autism when you were 6 years old. And you've done a remarkable job of fighting through that to even author a book. It's really remarkable what you've done and the endeavor that you've taken upon. When you look at your battle with autism, can you kind of take us through what that was like growing up with autism?
Absolutely. As a child, I had many difficulties interacting with other people and getting along with the community because I did not interpret sarcasm or jokes like others did. And therefore, I started thinking, I'm just going to be my own self and not even care what others are doing anymore around me because I cannot tend to agree or understand why they're playing all kinds of games and jokes at each other, because I've always been a guy that is like very serious and very conscious about talking traditional historical things and scientific things. In fact, I wanted to become an astronomer as a kid because I was very in love with the nature of stars and planets. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school, that's when I really started becoming extra bullied and told that I don't have enough qualities or skills in my mind to take certain classes. And that one would be physics, others would be math above algebra, and even taking architecture mathematically was a difficulty for me to achieve my goal because they think that I did not have the skills to do so. I did not let that talk me down on still achieving my potential in my inner mind. That's always what I keep in me is my mind. No one can take that away from me.
Certainly.
And when I went to the library one time during lunchtime, I was asked, why are you not taking lunch and relaxing? I said, I got other things to think about. I'm more serious than just this guy who wants to go hang out with all these students. And so it's very important for someone to think about history and thinking about science is very important to impact the future. And that's what I thought I would do one day is impact the future.
Yeah, and you certainly are on your way in doing that. And we apologize for the language that just crossed the airwaves. We got to keep it G here, Xavier. All right, again, we are chatting with Xavier D. Grote here. He's the author of an upcoming book profiling the life of Muhammad Ali. For you, Xavier, what's the groundwork been like when, you know, putting together this book? And what people have you talked to? What interviews have you conducted in putting together this great piece of literature?
I will start out with roughly 5 years ago, I had visited the Muhammad Ali Center in Louisville, Kentucky for my 21st birthday. Mm-hmm. And it was very much an influence to me because the Muhammad Ali Center shows much more than just about his boxing. It shows about his humanitarian efforts. Therefore, I went home that night and thought, man, I need to write a book on Muhammad Ali because that man is hilarious and fabulous on how he helped other people. He never given up on his own dreams and his passion and potential. Muhammad Ali didn't. He had much of an agreement to making others be themselves as well. And that's the whole idea of the Muhammad Ali Center is be yourself, have confidence, and have faith in spirituality and what is your thoughts towards society. If you do that, you're better off than over letting others talk you into nonsense.
Certainly. Who'd you talk to, Xavier? Who'd you get a chance to chat with, individuals that either fought against Ali or were friends of Ali throughout his fighting career? And what were those? Who are those names?
Larry Holmes. I visited him here roughly a year ago in Pennsylvania. That is his hometown. It's named Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And I definitely had much of a chance to ask him firsthand, what was it like beating Muhammad Ali on his last great fight with you? And he told me that, hey, I am the greatest Xavier. Muhammad Ali isn't. But I laughed. I said, oh, okay, so you say.
That sounds like Holmes. That sounds like something he would say.
But when we talked about Larry Holmes and versus Muhammad Ali, he said that Muhammad Ali is a great man. Him and Ali are very close together today and still remain friends. Mm-hmm. And he talked to me a lot about how you cannot compare no boxer in history or athlete at all to Muhammad Ali for all the great things he had done beyond the scope of boxing.
Who else, other than Holmes, who would you get a chance to talk to?
Marvis Frazier, Smokin' Joe's son.
Okay.
And I got to interview him about how he felt, Marvis did, when his father was called an Uncle Tom by Muhammad Ali when he fought Thrill Manila.
Right.
And told that, hey, you're not a man. You're the white man's folk. You need to go out there and fight and show me that you can beat me. He said, you can't beat me. I'm the greatest.
Right. I tell you what, if I could count on how many times Ali said I'm the greatest throughout his entire career, I would be one rich man if I got a dollar for it, all right? Also, so Holmes, just rattle off some names. Who else you talk to?
I've spoken to Michael Spinks.
Spinks, okay.
And Michael Spinks had spoken to me about Leon Spinks being one of the first, or the first maybe, fighter that had beaten Muhammad Ali in the ring. And that had become a serious controversy in history because a lot of people thought that Leon Spinks was taking over with his muscles, but Muhammad Ali was this mental fighter who knew how to talk you into nonsense. And
of course,
I guarantee that Muhammad Ali had a chance to beat him at the last round until Muhammad Ali had found out that, man, he was wore out that night. He was already crawling himself on the ground, and that made him lose.
Yeah, so before we wrap this up here, Xavier, I want to ask, what was it like getting a chance to meet Muhammad Ali? What was that interaction like? And you got a chance to interview him, right, I'm assuming?
Yes, absolutely. I asked him questions, but as you may know, he has Parkinson's disease, and mm-hmm. he cannot speak clearly. But Lani Ali, his wife, was able to translate to answers to my questions for Muhammad Ali. And one of my biggest questions to Muhammad Ali was, what made you so interested in using your fame of boxing to devotion on others? And he answered me telling me that, the experience that I faced as my kid was totally a target for my successful life because it gave me the thought that I need to go out there and be something one day and show people that, hey, African Americans and people as a whole have skills. You cannot let yourself be talked down because others are telling you that you can't do something. And that's much very common, I said, to what is like for me having autism, that I was told I would never achieve or succeed to anything in my life because I have autism, my school teachers have told me in high school.
And you are certainly excelling in that area, Xavier. You have done one remarkable job. I'm looking forward to checking out this book. It actually releases, as you told me, in August, am I right?
Correct.
It releases in August, and we will be sure to let our listeners know when it drops so you can get a copy of it. And I got to know, because it is Autism Awareness Month in April. And Xavier, I got to know, what does this month mean to you? And I know that you also have a pretty cool connection with the Autism Alliance of Michigan, am I right?
Correct. Yes. I, in fact, was interviewed by them, and you can find me on their website being asked, Xavier, tell me what is great about you beyond your autism experiences that made you strong and dedicated to doing all the cool things you do, like writing books and advocating for justice for people with disabilities. I told them that autism is not a disorder necessarily. I don't like how they stereotype it as a disorder and completely disabled, because we are not disabled fully. We have our times where we are limited to how we understand the world around us as far as language and as far as light sensitivities or smell. We don't smell and taste things like others do. We live in a whole new culture. In fact, there's a book out there called Anthropologists for Mars. We are in a way a whole new culture where we don't interact the same way as the typical person does. And we, in fact, with autism, don't have any sense abilities to want to go out there and just talk nonsense, sarcasm at one another. That doesn't mean nothing to us. What means to us is physical evidence where you can observe and play around with, like plants, let's say, or automobiles, depending on what the person's interest is. And autism has done a lot of impact on helping our society move forward with technologies and innovations. And that one of that includes Silicon Valley in California. Without people with autism, Silicon Valley would probably be literally impossible to have be created.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they have thought that Bill Gates has common symptoms to a person with Asperger syndrome. And he shakes his head back and forth, and he doesn't like all the attention all that much all the time.
Well, I tell you what, Xavier, you are an inspiration to many and many of our listeners, I'm sure. Xavier D. Grote, author of an upcoming book profiling the life and experiences of the greatest Muhammad Ali. Xavier, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Well, just 3 minutes left here in the show. Isaac, time flies when you're having fun, and time flies especially when you have two guests, all right? And they were absolutely fantastic, right?
Both of them, yeah. Couldn't have a better show, I'd say. And big news to start off, and then even bigger stories in a historical context. So it was absolutely great to get both of those sides, all of the angles. And you know what? That's what we try to do here at Current Sports, to pub ourselves.
That's what we do. We may have to invest in a bleep button next time. All right. Well, 3 minutes left here in the show. Again, folks, the news of today. And I'm pretty glad that I didn't spend my entire hour here on the show dissecting what a 19-year-old decided to do, taking his talents to a school other than Michigan State. Hey, the kid made the best decision for him, all right? Let's not cry over spilt milk here. When looking at Michigan State, they still have the best recruiting class of the Tom Izzo era. When you look at Nick Ward, Josh Langford, Cassius Winston, and Miles Bridges, those four are going to be must-see TV, even without the addition of Josh Daxon or the return of Deontay Davis. So I want to stop hearing the crying from Spartan fans. Celebrate what you got. Tom Izzo normally doesn't get the number one recruit in basketball on a yearly basis anyway. So why is this shocking to anybody? You know what I mean? So I just don't understand. And everybody that's bashing him, because I immediately went to social media and saw countless individuals bashing this young man for his decision not to come to their respective school, either if it was at Michigan State or Arizona. And I just shook my head and said, really? This is a kid we're talking about. So I'm ecstatic. I didn't waste my entire hour talking about those two things. That's just me. If you wanna dive into it, you can listen to some other sports talk show. I won't waste my time on that, at least on the day.
Yeah, he went to the place that's best for him. And the other thing is, I think that this team, now listen, any team's benefited by having the number one recruit in the nation.
Right.
But this team will have been so clustered, so crowded. Where does everybody fit in if Josh Jackson comes on? Aaron Harris was an 18 points per game scorer his sophomore year. Then you got Josh Langford, Cassius Winston, too many people to name. This team's going to be fine.
They will be just fine. All right. Much thanks to Xavier D. Grote and also Dr. William Anderson. Fantastic show. We'll be back at it tomorrow, folks. Same time, same place. You have been listening to WKAR's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care, and as always, be easy, people.